Turn to Proverbs 6 and verse 2. Lord willing, I want to get through four verses tonight. This will get us the whole way through this section on being surety for a stranger. Proverbs 6 and verse 2. He says, "Thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth." Now to get the context, let's just read verse 1. He says, "My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth." So the being snared here happens as a result of being surety for a friend with a stranger. So as we looked at in verse 1, in order to be surety for a person, two things are necessary. The first thing is a handshake, when he says, if thou hast stricken hands with a stranger, and we looked at last time that that's a handshake. And the second is a verbal agreement, and he says that in this verse here, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. So that's what you do when you're surety. You give your verbal agreement, and you seal it with a handshake. And when you do that, you are snared, as Solomon is telling us here. So the words establishing a suretyship. And remember, a suretyship is like co-signing for a loan. Basically, whenever you're the guarantor of somebody else's debt, that is a snare to a man. A snare, or to snare, the verb, is to capture small wild animals, birds, etc., in a snare, to catch by entangling. This is what you would call an entangling alliance if you are in a deal to be surety for somebody. And just as an animal gets entangled in a rope or net, so a man gets entangled in foolish agreements to guarantee another's debts. So if you guarantee another person's debt, anytime you think about co-signing for somebody, just think about that net that the bird or the animal gets caught in, and he's all wound up in it, and he's trying to get out, and he can't, and the hunter is walking towards him, getting ready to slice his throat. Just think about that the next time you want to co-sign for a loan. Thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. And what'll happen sometimes is that sometimes you might, the deal might be totally on the up and up and you just foolishly were surety, or sometimes you might be deceived into it, because wicked people do try to tangle righteous people with their words. An example, this is what they did to our Lord Jesus in Matthew 22 and verse 15. Matthew 22, 15. What they wanted Jesus to do was to say something that they could use against him. Well, when you're surety for somebody, in a sense you are saying something that they can use against you. You're saying, yes, I will vouch for this guy, I will cover his debt, and therefore, whenever he goes back on that debt, then that is going to be brought up, and your words are going to be the snare that makes you liable for that debt. Matthew 22 and verse 15. It says, "Then went the Pharisees and took counsel how they might entangle him in his talk." So yes, wicked people can use our own words to tangle us up. So you want to be very careful, because wicked men will try to entangle you with carefully worded verbal or written agreements that they can use, that they can get you to assent with by your words, or by your signature, for that matter. So anytime you sign something, any kind of a contract, read it. And I know that sounds obvious, but you'd be surprised how many people sign contracts that don't read them. I mean, I know people that I'm very close with, that signed like big-time contracts, like huge contracts, didn't even read it, just trusted the guy that they were signing it with and figured the lawyer looked at it or something. I'm just like, wow, you are nuts. But anyway, that person learned his lesson.
Kind of reminds me of all of those amendments they want to put in when we're voting. How at the beginning it sounds all great, but if you actually read it, what they're trying to put in with that is bad.
Yeah, exactly. What kind of irritates me is with the amendments or the issues that you vote on, they don't give you all the details on the ballot either. And so you read on the ballot, the part they put on the ballot looks okay, but then you find out later, oh, there's all this other stuff that wasn't even on there. So yeah, so you want to be really careful about that, because if you sign a contract and then you can't come back and say, well, I didn't know what it meant, or I didn't read it or something, you're going to be in trouble. I think an exception to that might be, for me personally anyway, these stupid user agreements online Like, I'll be honest with you, I don't read hardly any of them. I just scan down and just click OK. Because the thing is, they're written in such legalese that you can't understand them anyway. And I don't think a lot of those would stand up in court, because they just know that it's pretty much an unwritten rule that nobody reads the things. And so I wonder if they'd hold up in court anyway.
It would take hours or days to read most of them if you have to actually right. look at how long they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Magnifying glass, too.
Yeah, right. But if it's an actual contract I'm signing, then I definitely read that. So sinful or foolish words will snare the wicked. Just to show you that words can snare you. Proverbs 12 and verse 13. Proverbs 12:13. So the wicked is snared by the transgression of his lips, but the just shall come out of trouble. See how the things that we say can end up snaring us. Thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. And our own words will be used to condemn a man. This is what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 37. And this fits. This is not what Jesus was speaking of specifically, but this does fit, that our own words will be used to condemn us. Because if you give your word that you are going to be a guarantor for somebody else's debt and that person doesn't pay, then your own words that you said are going to come back and they're going to say, but you said you would cover this. Well, I didn't think he was going to default. Well, you said, right? So you will be judged by your own words. Matthew 12 and verse 37. Jesus said, for by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. And you remember in the parable that Jesus taught in Luke 19:22, that it was said that out of thine own mouth will I judge thee, thou wicked servant. Matthew 12 and verse 19 part. Luke, wow. Luke 19:22. And he said unto him, out of thine own mouth will I judge thee, thou wicked servant. Thou knewest that I was an austere man, taking up that I laid not down, and reaping that I did not sow. So the things that the man said, because he admitted that he was an austere man and he was afraid and he went and hid his talent in the earth and so on. And the guy says, all right, you're going to be judged from your own words. From the things that you said, your punishment is going to come. So you want to be really careful about what you say, because death and life are in the power of the tongue. Proverbs 18 and verse 21. This is true of agreements, and this is just true of whenever you can't control your temper and you say something you shouldn't, and you can get yourself in a lot of trouble with that. And I'm sure we've all experienced it. Proverbs 18 and verse 21 says, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof. If you love death, you'll eat the fruit of death. And if you love life, you'll eat the fruit of life. And whether you love death or life will be demonstrated by the words that come out of your mouth. Because if you love life, you'll control your tongue. You'll be sensible enough to realize that I can get myself in a lot of trouble if I don't. And if you love death, you're going to be stupid enough to say foolish things that are going to end up getting you judged.
I've always thought that if you love to talk, then you actually will eat the fruit thereof.
That it is the tongue?
Yes, like talking.
And that could...
I didn't know how to take that. I've already written that verse down to ask about this every month. I
will give you a definite explanation of it in 5 years from now when we get to that verse.
May that love this. Mm-hmm. Yes, I was thinking maybe it has something to do with talking. If you like to talk, then you have to be careful with whether or not you're talking...
Mm-hmm. I mean, you will eat the fruit of what you say, certainly, and what you say can be a determiner of life and death. And so, yeah, I don't know. Well, I'll look into that one a little more carefully when we get there. And then Solomon says in the remainder of verse 2, Proverbs 6:2, thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. So it's interesting. He first of all says, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Then he says, thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Now, if you turn with me to Isaiah 28 and verse 13, it's interesting that we will see that when a person is snared, he is then taken. So you have to snare somebody first before you can take him, which makes a lot of sense if you think about it. If you're trying to catch an animal, you can't take him until you've caught him, right? You got to snare him and then take him. Isaiah 28 and verse 13. It says, but the word of the Lord was unto them, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little and there a little, that they might go and fall backward and be broken and snared and taken. Snared first and then taken. Thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. So as I've said before, the Lord uses the same means that he uses to teach his children his word. Here a little, there a little, line upon line, precept upon precept, comparing scripture with scripture. He uses that method to teach doctrine. You read about that there in the first verses 9 and 10. But then he uses that same exact method in verse 13 to cause the wicked to be broken and snared and taken. They don't compare scripture with scripture. They take one verse out of context, interpret it all by itself, and come up with a faulty interpretation, and they're snared and taken by that. So the very means by which God teaches some, he judges others if they don't use those means that he's given. So the words of the agreement, back to the suretyship thing, the words of the agreement will be used to catch the man and then take him to the cleaners to pay the debt of his friend when he defaults. Catch him and then take him. So that takes care of verse 2. Turn to Proverbs 6 and verse 3. Proverbs 6:3. He says, do this now, my son, and deliver thyself. When thou art come into the hand of thy friend, go humble thyself and make sure thy friend. So this is the most important verse in this section of verses, from verses 1 to 5, talking about suretyship. This is the most important one because this is the crux of the matter. This tells us how to get out of being surety, sort of. The other ones warn us about it, but the first two warn us about it. The last three tell us how to get out of it and how to do so quickly. So let's look at it here, phrase by phrase. He says, do this now, my son. So if you've become surety for a friend's debt, like you've co-signed for his loan or something, it's necessary to act now. Do this now, my son. Now means at the present time or moment. So in other words, time is of the essence. You're only one layoff or one late payment or one emergency away from being on the hook for somebody else's debt. All he has to do is lose his job, and guess what? You're going to pay that debt. Or he has to, you know, he messes around and makes some late payments, and the guy says, all right, that's it, I'm collecting it, and he can't pay, so it goes to you because you're the surety. Or his house burns down or his car blows up or whatever, and there you are on the hook. So he says, do this now, my son, because today is the day of salvation. Look at 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 2. 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 2. For he saith, I have heard thee in a time accepted, and in the day of salvation have I succored thee. Have I helped thee, in other words. Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. Now, we could apply this to all kinds of things, but it certainly applies here. Now is the day of salvation. Now is the day to deliver yourself, which is what salvation is. It's deliverance. Now is the time to take care of it. Solomon was exhorting his son today while there was still time left. Hebrews 3 and verse 13. And this goes with any type of sin. Any sin that you are harboring right now and you're not dealing with, today is the day of salvation. Now is the time. Harden not your hearts while it is called today, because you never know how full your cup is before the Lord judges. Hebrews 3:13. But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. This is what Solomon is doing. He's exhorting his son while it is called today, because he doesn't want to see anything happen to his son. He wants to see his son delivered from this situation that could end up being very bad for him. Excuse me. So he says, do this now, my son, and deliver thyself. Deliver thyself. So by agreeing... So by agreeing to be surety for a friend, one has snared himself in a trap. You remember verse 2, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth, thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. So now you're in a trap, and you know when you're snared in the trap, you're caught. When you're taken, it's too late. Like, the hunter's already come and got you. So you're snared at this point anyway. He says, deliver thyself. To deliver is to set free, liberate, release, rescue, save. It's to free, rid, divest, clear. And reflexively, which is how it's used here, deliver thyself. Reflexively, remember, is whenever oneself is the object of the verb. It is to free oneself, get clear of, or rid of. So he's telling him to free yourself. Liberate yourself. He needs to free himself from the trap and get clear of the obligation, because no one else can or will do it for him. You see, whenever you're surety for a stranger, you are the only person that can free yourself from that suretyship. Nobody else can. Nobody else would even want to. They would have no reason to. Unless maybe you happen to owe some other people some money and they want to make sure they get paid. So therefore, you know, I guess there could be some way down the line reason why somebody else would want to make sure that your friend doesn't default, so, you know, it's not a cascade effect or something. But more than likely, nobody else is going to care. It's going to be on you. Of course, we all know that none of us can save ourselves eternally, but we can save ourselves temporally from the consequences of foolish decisions. Remember what Peter said in Acts 2 and verse 40? Save yourselves from this untoward generation. So we can save ourselves in that sense, temporally. And this is what Solomon is telling his son, to deliver yourself, or in other words, save yourself. He says, and deliver thyself when thou art come into the hand of thy friend. Now this is interesting. So if you come into the hand of somebody, you are put under their power. And I'll give you some verses that will establish this. Look at Deuteronomy 1 and verse 27. I'm just going to read you a string of verses here to show you that to come into somebody's hand is to be brought under their power and control. Deuteronomy 1, 27. It says, and ye murmured in your tents and said, because the Lord hated us, he brought us forth out of the land of Egypt to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites, to destroy us, into the hand of the Amorites. In other words, you're under the Amorites' power and under their dominion. Now look at Deuteronomy 19, 12. Deuteronomy 19, verse 12. It says, then the elders of his city shall send and fetch him thence and deliver him into the hand of the avenger of blood, that he may die. Well, if you get into the hand of the avenger of blood, you are now under his power and he's going to kill you. Okay. Judges 3 and verse 8. Judges 3 and verse 8. This is probably plenty. Let's see here. Judges 3:8. Therefore the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hand of Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia. And the children of Israel served Cushan-Rishathaim 8 years. It would have been nice if it just said him 8 years. Use the pronoun there. It would have made it easier on me. But anyway, delivered him into his hand. And there's another one in Judges 6:1, but I'm not going to read that. I think you get the point. So when he says, when thou art come into the hand of thy friend, this cannot be referring to the friend defaulting on his debt and causing the man to be obligated to pay the debt to the creditor. Because if it was that, then the man would come into the hand of the stranger, who is the creditor, and that he had stricken hands with. Right? Because if you think about it, if your friend defaults, you're not in your friend's hand anymore. Your friend's out of the picture. Now it's just you and the creditor, right? He doesn't owe the creditor anything. You owe the creditor. You have come into the hand of the creditor. You have come into the hand of the stranger. But Solomon says, when thou art come into the hand of thy friend, So what does that mean? How are you in the hand of your friend if it's not talking about your friend's default on the loan? Well, this must be referring to something else other than the friend defaulting and making the man to be obliged to pay off his debt to the stranger or creditor. And I'll explain how that's the case. So when a man agrees to be surety for a friend and assume responsibility for his debt if he defaults, he has come into the hand of his friend because his future is now in the power of his friend. So before the friend defaults, you are in the hand of the friend. You are under the friend's power right now because what he does is going to determine your future. You are at his mercy entirely. If the friend is irresponsible, then the guarantor is on the hook for his debt. So in such a situation, the man needs to deliver himself from the trap before it's too late. He's already in the snare, but he doesn't want to be taken. Your friend's got you in the snare. The stranger's going to take you if the friend defaults. He says, go humble thyself. So when thou art come into the hand of thy friend, go humble thyself. Now, why would it be necessary to humble yourself if you've been surety for the friend? Well, because of the agreement that was made, he is in the hand of his friend, as I've already said. His friend has the upper hand because all the risk has now been transferred to the guarantor. You are on the hook for all the risk. The friend doesn't really have any risk anymore. Yeah, maybe his credit will take a hit or something, but really, you're on the hook for all the debt, right? So you're under his power. Since a legal agreement has been made, the man, is in a position of weakness. So once you have legally agreed to assume his debt if he defaults, now you are in the position of weakness, right? You, even though you're the one that is supposed to have the money to take care of the friend, and really before the agreement, you're in a position of power, right? Because you can say yes or no. It's not my debt. I don't have to sign for you, right? You're in a position of great power. The second that ink dries, when you sign your name on there and you give your hand and you're surety for a stranger, you went from a position of power to a position of weakness because now you are at the mercy of your friend, when before you were totally free. Well, because of his weak position, it's necessary for the man to humble himself in order to influence his friend. You just can't go up to your friend and just start demanding, you better pay that debt because I don't want to end up being on the hook for it. You can't. You'd be stupid to do that. You might make him mad. He might just say, you know what, I'm going to stop paying. I'll just, you know, keep the thing that I just borrowed money on, and you can pay for it. So because you're in the weak position, you've got to humble yourself now. Because we're told in James 4 and verse 6 that God resists the proud, but he gives grace unto the humble. So if you want to extricate yourself from this position that you've got yourself in, the key to it is humility. James 4 and verse 6. It says, but he giveth more grace, wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. And you know, it's not only God who gives grace to the humble. Men give grace to the humble too, right? Men treat humble men graciously. Men do not treat proud men graciously if they don't have to, right? And I guess you don't ever have to treat somebody graciously because the definition of grace is being nice to somebody when you don't have to. So if you want somebody to treat you mercifully, you best humble yourself. The man who is in debt, or in this case, in danger of assuming the debt, he needs to be humble when approaching a man that has power over him. So when you go to your friend and you try to encourage him to make sure he pays off this debt, you want to do so humbly. And I'll give you an example of this in Matthew 18, verses 23 through 27. Matthew 18, 23 through 27. If you are ever dumb enough to co-sign for a loan and you want to get out from under it, well, first of all, refer to this study. Second of all, go read Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People, and then go put this study into practice with some of the tactics that you learned there, and you might have a chance of saving yourself from it. Matthew 18, 23 through 27. Jesus said, therefore is the kingdom of heaven likened unto a certain king which would take account of his servants, And when he had begun to reckon, one was brought unto him which owed him 10,000 talents. But for as much as he had not to pay, his Lord commanded him to be sold, and his wife and children, and all that he had, and payment to be made. And the servant therefore fell down and worshipped him, saying, Lord, have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. This is called humbling yourself, when you fall down before somebody and beg for mercy. Then the Lord of that servant was moved with compassion and loosed him and forgave him the debt. That's how you do it, by humbling yourself. You see, whenever you are in a position of weakness and you are poor, whether poor financially or poor when it comes to power, you must use entreaties, not demands, when you want to get something. Proverbs 18 and verse 23. You know, this is why when the police officer pulls you over, you entreat him not to give you a ticket. You don't demand that he doesn't give you a ticket. Because if you want a ticket, the best way to get one is to demand that he doesn't give you one, and you will be sure to get one. Or tell him that you weren't really speeding, or you didn't really do it, or whatever. No, you admit it, you tell him how stupid you are, I wasn't paying attention, I'm a total idiot, and I'm really sorry. And you humble yourself, and you hope you don't get the ticket, and then you drive away and go, whew, thank the Lord. That's what you do. And you can cry if you're a woman, yes. If you cry if you're a man, you're probably going to get a ticket anyway because you're a wimp, and I'd give you a ticket just for being a baby if I was a cop. But.
Just say you're a nurse.
Yeah, there you go. Or just start coughing incessantly and say you have COVID and you're on the way to the hospital.
I like the diarrhea excuse.
Or that one works too. Yeah.
He just looks at me and he knows I'm Asian, so.
Yeah.
There you go.
That is, yes.
That explains it. So he's like, okay, you're off the hook.
You're a woman and you're Asian. And that's a, you know. No, she's never been pulled. You've never been pulled over, have you? Proverbs 18:23. It says, the poor useth entreaties, but the rich answereth roughly. So when you're rich, you can afford to not use entreaties, to not be nice, to not petition somebody. You can just be a jerk because you're rich, right? But when you're poor, you got to be nice. Of course, you should always be nice, but that's just kind of how the world works. So he says, go humble thyself and make sure thy friend. So here is how you deliver yourself. The man that has become surety for his friend can't take back, or he can't back out of being guarantor of his debt because he's stricken his hand with the creditor and given him his word that he would pay the debt if it's defaulted on. So you can't just back out. When he says, you know, go deliver thyself, he's not just saying, go tell him that this contract's null and void. Well, that's illegal. You can't do that. And it's immoral. It's unethical. When you've said you're going to do something, you have to do it. So delivering himself can't refer to that. So how does he get out of it? If he can't legally get out of it, if he can't get himself extricated from the contract, what does he do? What's crucial, therefore, that he makes sure his friend will pay off his debt. So there's two ways that you could, well, without actually getting out of it, I guess there's one way that you can guarantee that you're not going to end up having to pay that debt, and that is by making sure that your friend pays the debt, right? So if you can make sure your friend pays the debt, then you're not going to have to pay the debt. You're not ever going to be on the hook for it. And that's what Solomon's telling us to do. Question?
No.
Oh, to make sure thy friend. So therefore, he needs to make his friend sure. And sure, when it's speaking of in the context of being trustworthy, firm, or steadfast, it means that can be depended or relied on, not liable to fail or disappoint expectation. Trustworthy, reliable. And the phrase to make sure means to make something certain as an end or result, to preclude risk of failure. So in other words, he needs to gently encourage his friend to be a trustworthy man and to be steadfast in his promise to pay off the debt that he owes. If you do that, you make sure your friend, you make him dependable. You make him trustworthy. You make him reliable. And you do so humbly. You gently encourage him. You don't go up there and say, hey, you need to pay off this debt because you're going to be a slouch if you don't, and people are going to hate you. And no, you got to be nice about it. You got to go there gently and encourage him and tell him, and maybe use, like we talked about the other day, where you get him to come to the conclusion himself and say, you know, if you were to default on this debt, you know what could happen, right? I mean, you're going to take, your credit score is going to take a hit, and then nobody's ever going to want to loan you money again, and, you know, your reputation is going to be tarnished, right? So you go about it that way, and you're humble about it and gentle about it, and you make him sure. Now, since he is in a position of weakness, this is the person that's surety. Since he's in a position of weakness, he needs to approach his friend humbly and not simply demand that his friend pays the debt. In such a case, it would be wise to remind his friend that it would be in his friend's best interest to pay off his debt, because not doing so would hurt both his reputation and his credit score. So remind him of his duties and do it nicely. If he influences his friend for good and encourages him to faithfully pay off his debt, the result will be certain or sure and will greatly reduce the risk of him failing to pay. And ultimately, it's good for you. If his friend is made sure, then he will not end up being on the hook for his debt, and he, his friend, and the creditor will all be happy. So this is how you deliver yourself, by humbly making sure thy friend, making sure that he pays the debt. That takes care of verse 3. Turn to Proverbs 6:4. So we just learned in verse 3 how to ensure that you don't end up on the hook for your friend's debt, that you don't end up paying it if he defaults, and that is to humbly make him sure, to humbly encourage him to make sure that he pays it himself. And now Solomon says, "Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids." And of course, he's referring to what he just mentioned there in the previous three verses. Now, it's just an interesting aside that Solomon learned this phrase from his father, David. In Psalm 132 in verse 4, David said the exact same thing, not in the same context, but the same phrase. This just shows you that sometimes children pick up things from their fathers. And this also tells you fathers to be careful what you say around your children, because they will pick up both the good and the bad. Psalm 132 and verse 4. David said, "I will not give sleep to mine eyes, nor slumber to mine eyelids, until I find out a place for the Lord and habitation for the mighty God of Jacob." But same exact phrase, "I will not give sleep to mine eyes, nor slumber to mine eyelids." So we see here where Solomon got that idea. Solomon is here emphasizing the importance of taking action quickly to deliver oneself out of the predicament of being surety for a friend. Being surety for a friend is such a dangerous proposition that one must do whatever is possible to deliver himself from it today before going to bed. That's what he's saying. Give not sleep to thine eyes or slumber to thine eyelids. Do it now. Go over there and talk to your friend now, because you never know when he's going to do something boneheaded and not be able to pay his debt. So take care of it today. Don't go to bed until you've done it. Solomon exhorted his son twice to deliver himself from his friend. He did so in verse 3 when he said, "Do this now, my son, deliver thyself." And then he again in verse 5, "Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter." We'll look at that here in just a minute. So two different times he tells him to deliver himself. Remember, deliver is a synonym of save. The dictionary told us that. The Bible tells us that too. In Acts 2:21, Peter said that whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. He was quoting from the prophet Joel. When you go back to Joel 2:32, Joel said, "Whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be delivered." So you put those two together, saved equals delivered. They're synonyms. Remember, to deliver is to set free, liberate, release, rescue, save. So in other words, if you have become surety for a friend, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. Remember 2 Corinthians 6:2? We already looked at that verse here in the previous verse, I think it was, or the one before that. So you want to exhort your friend daily while it is called today. Hebrews 3:13, to be faithful, to pay his debt. That's what, remember what Paul told us in Hebrews? Exhort one another daily while it is called today. Well, do this with your friend. Exhort him daily. But do it humbly and don't be a nag. And don't, you might want to, you might not want to do it every day. But, you know, every once in a while, just remind him. I have known somebody that did this, and I don't think the person that the friend in this case, the friend that had the obligation, knew what the other friend was doing, and maybe was even irritated by it, whenever he was trying to make sure his friend, by encouraging the friend to make sure you keep working, you know, make sure you want to make sure you do this. And I think what the friend was doing was making sure his friend, though the friend
didn't appreciate it.
Anyway, Sitna knows what I'm talking about, but it doesn't matter. But the point is, I've seen this happen in real life. I've seen this very thing played out right in front of me. In Hebrews 3:15, it says, "Today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts." And apply that verse here. Take action and save yourself from being on the hook for your friend's debt. And then Solomon said, "Nor slumber to thine eyelids. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids." And slumber is just another word for sleep. It means sleep or repose. They're synonyms. And eyes and eyelids are often used interchangeably in Scripture. Proverbs 4 and verse 25. He said, "Let thine eyes look right on, and let thine eyelids look straight before thee." It's just another way of saying eyes, if you're saying eyelids. And Proverbs 30 and verse 13. Proverbs 30 and verse 13. It says, "There is a generation, oh, how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up." Lofty is lifted up, right? Their eyes are lifted up, their eyelids are lifted up. So eyes, eyelids, it's just another way of saying the same thing. So this verse is an example of a Hebrew parallelism in which a thought is repeated using slightly different wording to emphasize the point. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids. He's not telling him to do two different things. He's telling him to do the same thing, just in two different ways of saying it, basically. And you'll find this all through the Proverbs and all through the Old Testament, for that matter. So that takes care of Proverbs 6:4. You want to make sure that you take care of this before you go to bed. Make sure that your friend is sure and he's going to pay his debt. Turn to Proverbs 6:5. Proverbs 6:5. He says, "Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter and as a bird from the hand of the fowler." So let's look at the first part there. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter. Of course, we're still talking about being surety for thy friend, striking hands with a stranger, so you've agreed to pay your friend's debt, and you want to get out of that obligation, but you can't legally get out of it. But what you can do is make sure that your friend pays his debt. So you deliver yourself by making sure thy friend, encouraging him to make sure he pays that debt. That's what we've covered so far. And now Solomon again tells him, deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter. So he uses now an example, an illustration. He told him to deliver himself in, in verse 3. Now he says, as a roe from the hand of the hunter. So it's often good to use an illustration because you can think about a roe and a hunter and what happens to the roe if he gets caught by the hunter. You're like, oh yeah, that's a bad thing. So sometimes it's good to use an illustration. So this is the second time that Solomon has exhorted his son to save himself from the trap of suretyship, which demonstrates how important it is to do so. If he tells him twice, it's important enough to repeat it. Remember, to deliver is to set free, liberate, release, rescue, save. As I said here a few minutes ago, we can't save ourselves eternally, but we can save ourselves temporally from the consequences of foolish decisions. Save yourselves from this untoward generation, Peter said in Acts 2 and verse 40. So by agreeing to be surety for a friend, one has snared himself in a trap. You'll remember we talked about that in verse 2. Thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. And a snare or to snare is to capture small wild animals, birds, etc., in a snare to catch by entangling. So Solomon is using the example of a roe, which is, who remembers what a roe is? We covered that in Proverbs 5.
A deer.
A female deer, yes. So Solomon uses this example. Now, when we hunt, we don't snare and trap deer, right? We shoot them with guns, or some of us use bows and arrows. Some of us who are really adept use an atlatl, like I do. Yeah, right. Is that what it's called, an atlatl? Yeah. No, of course I don't use an atlatl. There are people that do that, but you got to be very talented to do something like that, which I am not. So he uses the example of a roe delivering itself out of the hand of the hunter to illustrate extricating oneself from being liable for another man's debt. Now, in Bible times, you have to remember that things were different back then, right? In Bible times, larger animals were hunted using nets or pits. I'll give you an example of that, a couple of examples of a net and a pit. One each, that is. Isaiah 51, verse 20. Isaiah 51, and verse 20. It says, thy sons have fainted, they lie at the head of all the streets, as a wild bull in a net. They are full of fury of the Lord, the rebuke of thy God. A wild bull in a net. This is not referring to a bull like a cow that would be domesticated. It's a wild bull, which could be an elk or a moose or any number of bison, any number of male animals like that are called bulls. So they would catch a bull in a net. And they also used pits. Look in 2 Samuel 23 and verse 20. 2 Samuel 23 and verse 20. You think Uncle Willie would care if I go out there in the woods and dig a big pit and cover it over? put big spikes at the bottom of it or something? Catch me some deer? 2 Samuel 23 and verse 20. I have a feeling if he drove his tractor into it, he probably wouldn't allow me to be hunting there anymore.
He'd probably be okay with it.
Right, yeah. 2 Samuel 23 and verse 20.
You want to really cover it over with leaves and sticks and everything, just so it didn't make the landscape look bad. Then
oh,
I
yeah.
Think he'd care.
Well, that's how you do it.
Well, you know?
Believe it or not, when we were kids, this is the craziest thing, but back in the woods on the trail, we would go and dig holes. Now, they weren't pits that you'd fall in and couldn't get out of, but we might dig a pit that was like 2 or 3 feet deep and then cover it over with sticks and leaves for, you know, just in case somebody was back there, you know, where they shouldn't be, and we could catch them. Well, if my dad would have ever fallen in that pit, we would have been in some severe trouble, I'm sure.
See, you thought it was bad when we cut down trees in the neighbor's woods.
This was our own woods, but yeah, I can just imagine if my dad would have fallen in that thing. We wanted to protect the place, you know, from intruders or something.
Yes, I think it looks pretty well. You could
break
a leg in that.
Oh,
yeah,
easily. You could definitely break a leg. Okay, 2 Samuel 23:20 says, and Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man of Kabzeel, who had done many acts, he slew 2 lion-like men of Moab. He went down also and slew a lion in the midst of a pit in time of snow. So I'm assuming the lion got caught in the pit as a trap, and he went right down in there and killed the thing. If it was me, I would have thrown large rocks at him and hoped to knock him out, but he went right down there and killed him. So you start to understand why Solomon says, deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, right? Because the roe ends up down in a pit or in a snare. And, you know, these are two techniques that are used to capture animals. And once the animal was captured in either a net or a pit, then, of course, it's going to fight with all its might to deliver itself from the hand of the hunter who is coming to kill it, right? He's snared, and he's trying to get out of there before he gets taken. Now, if you become surety, or in other words, you've co-signed for a loan, for a friend's debt obligation, you should likewise do everything in your power to deliver yourself from that trap before it's too late, just like the deer would be trying to get out of that pit or trying to get out of that net before the hunter comes along and kills him. And then Solomon finishes up this verse by saying, to deliver thyself as a bird from the hand of the fowler. And fowlers likewise catch their prey with snares and nets. You look in Psalm 91 in verse 3. Psalm 91. In verse 3. It says, surely he shall deliver thee from the snare of the fowler and from the noisome pestilence. So fowlers use snares. A fowler is an old word, which means one who hunts wild birds, whether for sport or food, especially with nets, a bird catcher. So just as a bird would try desperately to get out of the net before the fowler comes to harvest him, so we must do likewise if we have guaranteed another's debt. Be like the deer, be like the bird, and try to get out of that net. And in this case, how do you get out of the net? You go make sure thy friend. You go talk your friend into making sure that he gets that debt paid on time so that you don't end up being on the hook for it. And that takes care of Proverbs 6:5, and that takes care of this section here on being surety.